Good morning, everyone. I'm Helen Rosenfeld. I'm the executive director of One Hen, Inc. We are a nonprofit organization that evolved from the book One Hen, How One Small Loan Made a Big Difference. And we inspire youth via social entrepreneurship to make a difference for themselves and the world. And so I have the honor today of introducing our illustrious panel of authors and folks involved in various nonprofits that have been inspired by or have inspired the books that we're going to be discussing. And I'd like to introduce our panel. So first, here we have Katie Smith Milway. She's the author of One Hen. And not just One Hen, but also Mimi's Village and The Good Garden. And so Katie, through her work and with these books, has inspired thousands of kids around the world to do social good. And she also, in her professional life, is a partner at Bridgespan Group. We have Liz Sunaby, who is the author of Razia's Ray of Hope. Liz is the award-winning author of books for children and teens, and Razia's Ray of Hope is her sixth book. It's based on a true story of a girl determined to attend a school for girls outside of Kabul. And she loves leading workshops for kids around the country and seeing their reaction to the fact that 96 million school-age kids do not go to school. And then in some countries, only boys go to school and not girls. We have Razia John, whose story inspired the book. She was born in Afghanistan and has worked for many years to forge connections between Afghans and Americans. She's the founder of Razia's Ray of Hope, a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the lives of women and children in Afghanistan through community-based organizations. Community-based education. She was nominated as a top 10 CNN hero of 2012 for her work on the Zabuli Education Center, a school in rural Afghanistan. And we have Patty Quigley. She's the current executive director of Razia's Ray of Hope, a foundation that supports the education of Afghan girls and young women. And she's the co-founder of Beyond the 11th, an organization that aids Afghan women widowed by war and terrorism. So with that, I'm going to hand over the floor to Katie. Is it? Okay, no, this'll work. Okay.
Kojo tugs the knot tight and lifts a bundle of firewood onto his head. Since his father died, he's had to quit school and help his mother collect firewood to sell at the market. It's his last load of the day, and he is tired and hungry. Now, Kojo and his mother live in a mud-walled house with an open fire for cooking. Beside it is a garden where they grow their own food. They never have much money or much to eat. As Kojo nears his house, he can smell his mother's fufu cooking, their main meal made from cassava and yams. He begins to walk faster. Now, Kojo and his mother live in the Ashanti region of Ghana. There are 20 families in their village, and none of them have much money, but they do have a good idea. Their idea is that each family will save a bit of money each month so that one family can borrow it to buy something important. The first family, the Achimpong family, their idea is to use the money to buy a cartload of fruit to take to market so they can sell it piece by piece for a profit. When they pay back the loan, the second family, the Dodo family, have a good idea too. Their idea is to buy a used sewing machine so they can take the cloth they weave and turn it into shirts and dresses to wear. Finally, it's Kojo's mother's turn, and she also has an idea. Her idea is to buy a cart so she can transport more firewood to market and also rent it to others who need transport. But there are a few coins left over, and Kojo asks if he can have them because he has a good idea too. What do you think Kojo's good idea is? I'm just going to show you the name of the book again. Anybody have an idea? What's his idea? I need someone to answer. How about you? What do you think it is? He's going to buy a hen. He's going to buy a hen. Good answer. He's going to buy a hen, and that hen is actually going to be the beginning of him creating the largest poultry farm in Ghana. Now, it doesn't happen overnight. It happens egg by egg that he sells at the market, and coin by coin that he saves to pay his mother back, to buy more hens, to eventually fund fees for him to go to school, and also, finally, to have a track record that he can take to a bank and get a real loan to build a real farm. And there are big choices to make along the way. At one point, when he has some savings, he has to say, should I use it to build coops for my chickens so I can invest in my business? Should I use it to buy something my mother needs, a good bucket and a good knife? Or should I use it to pay my fees and go back to school? And I just want the kids to answer this. How many of you think he should have used it to invest in his chickens, his business? Would you want to use it, or would you use it to invest in your business? And how many to help his mother? She helped him. Oh my goodness, you're a serious bunch. So how many would use it to go back to school? Oh, maybe you'd spend it on candy. Okay. well, he did. He actually had a hard decision, but his mother said, you know what? Use your money to go back to school so you can learn for both of us, because she'd never had a chance to go to school. And that, I just want to leave you with that one image, because that is really the genesis of what we call the microfinance movement. It's a lot of women who want to do something to earn some money so they can get their kids to school and hopefully to university. And I've met women that are still selling fruit on the streets of Nairobi whose children are at the University of Nairobi because of one hen or one cartload of fruit or one sewing machine, something, honestly, that a lot of kids here with the pocket money they earn every year could help fund. So there's two messages to this story. One is that you can do something, even as a young person, and the other is that you can help somebody, even with the pocket money that you have. And microfinance is a great way to do it. At the end of the day, there's huge circles of benefit. First, his family benefits because he has the farm and they can live there and his mother doesn't have to sell firewood. Second, there's employees that benefit, and third, a town grows around the farm, and so you end up creating an economy, and eventually those businesses pay taxes and the whole country benefits. But one of the most important principles for Kojo, and this is true in real life, it's based on a real man who really did create the largest poultry farm in Ghana after he bought a few chickens or was able to raise a few chickens as a boy. Is that he said, you have to give back. If I help you, I want you to help the next person. So he started in his real life giving loans for some of his employees to start businesses, and then their job was to give loans for other people to start businesses, and eventually he was one of the founders of the microfinance movement in Ghana. So that's enough about this story. What I want to do now is hand it over to Helen to tell you a little bit about what the reaction to the story has been and what kids and teachers and educators, including parents, have been doing with just the inspiration of that story. Go ahead, Helen.
So the story of Kojo and Katie's work inspired a social movement. And that's where One Hen Inc., a nonprofit, evolved. And Katie is one of the co-founders. And what we do is we partner with community-based organizations and schools and then have materials on our website that inspire kids to start a small business and use that for social change. And so the process by which they do that is use the narrative arc of the story One Hen, how Kojo identified needs in his community, how he used business and learned along the way, how he got a loan, that's a critical piece of it, and had to pay that money back. And then ultimately the kids start to develop the idea of how to actually instigate change by using business. They ultimately have a selling event where they sell their products and they learn about revenue and profit and cost, and hopefully profit mostly. and through that process, they're then able, with their profits, to donate back. So they identify needs in their local community, needs in their global community to make that difference. We've been doing that here in Boston. We've been doing it across the country. And this summer, we actually launched the use of an app that does the same thing in Ethiopia as a poverty alleviation mechanism. So it's really exciting to see how this story, how Kobeno Darko, Kojo, as he's known in the story, how that has inspired this movement. We have a teacher, actually, who's used One Hen extensively in her classroom, Barbara Carbone, who'd be willing to share a few words about how she's done that. And she's really done an amazing job of infusing it throughout her curriculum with fourth graders in Canton, Massachusetts.
Good morning. 7 years ago, we saw actually an article in the Globe about the book and the group of teachers I work with and our principal, like, this is a really great idea. And so we took it and we started developing curriculum. And we met with Katie and Ama. the first year, and they came to the school a few times to visit with us and talk to the students. But every year now in fourth grade, we start off the year with the kids reading One Hen, and we have classroom sets that we bought through a grant. My book clubs in my fourth grade this year just finished reading it, so next week I start talking to them about microfinance. And we partner with a local bank who comes in, and they do a Savings Makes Sense program, so they talk about why it's important to save your money. And that's a state Massachusetts state program through the treasurer's office, so talk to your local banks because they love to do it. And the kids every year, they develop an idea. We named our program Beads for Needs as our shop, and every year they decide how we're going to do something with a bead theme. And we based it on, actually, the website with the bead game inspired the kids to come up with a bead theme, so we've kept with that. And every year they either, they make note cards with beads on them, or they make beads and make keychains or jewelry. We sell it at our fifth grade play every year in January, and then the children decide, okay, we've paid back our loan, because they take a loan from our principal to get their supplies after they research what they're doing. After they get their profit, they pay back their loan, and then they decide, groups of students get together and they research, where's the best place to put our money? Some years, 1 year we gave to Opportunity International, which is great, because we know that we helped fund, we gave them $400 and they funded, you know, $8 $50 loans, which was fabulous because the kids got to get feedback on that. Sometimes we give to the animal shelters. The kids find what they want. Like 1 year, one of our students was going through cancer treatment, so they gave to a cancer fund to promote that. So they research what is best to them. Then the entire fourth grade, they write an essay on it, they promote it, they sell it to their classmates, and then we come up with the best one in each of the four classrooms in the class. Then they vote on those four. And the students decide where the money's going. And it's a great experience every year, and it's something that sticks with them. 2 years ago, we were lucky because we got Cobano to come and talk to the kids, and those kids are in middle school now, and they still talk about when he came to visit, so that was fabulous. So it's a lot of fun.
I should clarify that Kojo is the book name, but the real name of the real man is Kwabena Darko. And just a fun fact, in Ghana, you're born with a name if you're in the Ashanti region, and Kojo is a Monday boy, and Kwabena is a Tuesday boy. And there's girl names and boy names for each of the days of the week you're born.
So just to wrap up our portion about One Hen, just to illustrate where in Boston folks are using it, we had a program this summer at the, actually last spring, the Red Oak Community Center in Chinatown. And those kids had a bake sale and had really good brownies and cookies where they had calculated the cost of their flour and their sugar and their butter and sold it, I believe, for an anti-bullying campaign that was going on. We had another program in Dorchester this summer with Viet Aid, which is another community-based organization. Those kids had three different businesses. They had a car wash, they sold Vietnamese smoothies, and they had a lemonade stand. And the unique pitch on their lemonade stand was that they were raising money to save the pandas, and one of the kids dressed up in a panda suit and was giving free hugs with his lemonade sales. So it just goes to illustrate that the kids are really creative and how the issue or the need that they're supporting is a really critical piece of the enterprise and that they learn through that process. So now I'd like to hand the floor to Liz.
I'm not Liz. I'm little Razia, and I'm 8 years old. As soon as I found out that there was a school for girls opening in my village, I knew I had to go. Where I live, no girls have ever gone to school before. But every night, for as long as I can remember, I fall asleep dreaming about going to school like my brothers. I actually sit by them as they study each night, so I can teach myself to read. I also take the newspaper that the baker wraps around our freshly baked naan bread and tuck it under my bedroll to practice reading at night when nobody knows and nobody can see me. My biggest problem is that my oldest brother, Aziz, does not want me to go to school. Can you believe that my brother gets to decide if I go to school? He thinks I should stay home and help my mother with chores. All the men in my family get to decide, so I have to figure out how to convince them. I think I'll go speak to Razia Jan, the really kind woman who is opening a school for girls in our village called Day Subs. It's outside of the capital city of Kabul, Afghanistan. Hello, Razia. My name is...
I'm so pleased to see you.
Nice to meet you. I want to come to your school, but my brother and father will not give me permission. Can you help me?
I think I'm going to talk to your brother. Your brother. Salam.
Salam.
Chitoraste. How are you?
Very good.
I'm surprised. Are you? You are not educated, right?
No.
But
no,
your brothers are going to school.
Right.
And you have six brothers, right?
Right.
And this is the only sister you have.
Right.
She's very precious to you, isn't
yes,
she?
Very precious.
But you know, you live across the street, and we promise that she will be very safe coming to school. And I see, I think she helped you. One day you came from school, from brick factory, and you were sick, I think it's 2-3 days ago. And
yes,
you couldn't read. You couldn't read what it was, and you said, I'm going to wait till my brothers come. So you asked, the sister came, and Razia came and sat next to you and said, Baba, I can help you. I can read. And you were shocked. And she read it to you. She brought a glass of water for you, and you drank it, and you felt better in the evening. But you didn't say anything to her, right?
Right.
Now you are. And now you are facing me. I really want this village that the girls should go to school. And I promise that they will be very safe. So would you be kind enough to talk to your father, your grandfather, and the grandmother if they will allow her to come to school?
Absolutely. Please.
Thank you so much.
So while, thank you very much for being a good sport. So while this was obviously a silly little reenactment, it's actually a true story. So Razia John, who's going to speak in a second, and Patty Quigley, they run a foundation called Razia's Ray of Hope. And Razia, who was born in Afghanistan but was educated in college here in the U.S., moved back to Afghanistan to start a school for girls in a village outside of the capital city where girls have never, ever gone to school before. So I'm going to turn it over to Patty, who's going to tell you a little bit about the school. And then we're really lucky because there is a teacher, Liz Gray, and four of her students from Carlisle who heard a workshop, or I led a workshop for all of the sixth graders. They're now in seventh grade, so it's really nice of them to come back, where I talked about 69 million kids in the world who don't get an education, and we used Razia's book as a springboard to explain all the issues that affect kids around the world and to try to get kids to be advocates for their peers to make sure that in the next generation, all kids get the fundamental right of an education. So these wonderful students, a little later, are going to share with you what they did to help send many girls to school.
Thank you very much. I'm Patty, and I'm the executive director, as you heard, of Razia's Ray of Hope Foundation. And I won't take up too much of your time, because you have heard quite a bit about the school. But I want to tell you a little bit about it physically, and how many kids are going there. As Razia said earlier, and Liz and Helen, there was never a girls' school in this village. And Razia, in her wisdom of what she wanted to do for her home country, was build a school for girls who have never been able to go to school. She saw things happening where the boys were getting a lot of privileges and the girls were not. And if you want to understand a little bit about Afghanistan, half the population right now, half of the population is under 18. So if you don't educate the girls, you're missing out on such a great resource of energy and where this country can go. So it was, when Razia told me she was doing this, I was absolutely going to help her out. And the school itself started off with 100 girls, and now we have over 400 girls. And in our next year, it will be our first year that we have a high school graduation. So it's very exciting. The class is about seven, eight girls. We have the Ministry of Education's blessing to go from kindergarten to 12th grade. And what we are working on right now is what to do for postgraduate work for the girls. So we've developed a program, a two-year program, that now the girls that are leaving the high school will be able to go to school for 2 years. In this country, a lot of people think automatically about going to college. And in the subs, the girls, some of the girls haven't even left their village. Imagine if you were in the town or city where you grow up right now and you've never gone to the town or the city next door. And your family is nervous, but they are seeing the positive impact that your education is having on the family and yourself. And so Razia, in her wisdom again, has been able to really do a great job of blending cultures, not bringing the United States culture to Afghanistan, because that doesn't always work, not staying with the same cultures that are currently, but blending the cultures and saying, you know what? There's three things that I know that these girls can do, no matter if they're single, married, or widowed, or whatever their situation is. They can learn to be midwives, help deliver babies. They can learn to be teachers, and they can learn to work in an office as an office administrator. So those are the things we're going to be doing in the next couple of years. But the one thing that I want to finish with is that what drew me to this program, other than being friends with Razia, other than affecting a culture half a world away, is that I wanted to help people in this country understand what was going on there. And in my mind, I was like, how are we going to reach out to the kids in our school? And all of a sudden, not saying anything to Liz, Liz came to me separately and said, I want to write a book. I was like, yeah, this is the whole thing put together. This is perfect. So now what's great is that Liz, as the author, is able to go around to all the different schools. You've been all around the country.
I just came back from Wisconsin, Illinois, and New York City, and heading to Texas next, so it's great.
So for me, I just want to leave you with that this foundation and this work that Razia has put together is really reaches all around the world and helps our students learn about this culture in Afghanistan and helps the girls in Afghanistan also learn about our culture. We have teleconferences with them. And so it's great. So I want to now turn it over back to Liz. And thank you.
Yay. So Liz Gray is a wonderful, wonderful sixth grade English language arts teacher in Carlisle. And I can tell you that every kid in her sixth grade English language arts class was incredibly prepared and interested in learning as much as they could about what life is like 6,500 miles away for girls in this city called Day Subs. And so she has brought with her four students. Could you stand up when I say your name? Ella. Wave to everyone, Ella. And Alana. And Maggie. And last but not least, Tilly. And these four students represent the whole sixth grade that without my asking, the way I end my presentation is, how are you going to make the world a better place? And let me tell you, these girls and their classmates have definitely done so. So I'm not going to steal their thunder or Liz's thunder, but I'm just going to turn it over to them, directly.
Yeah, okay, so thank you. I am lucky that I am an English teacher, so I do see the passion of books and the power of books. Just a little backup, as a sixth grade teacher, part of our curriculum for the last several years has been to study poverty across the world, and it's been an interdisciplinary unit where the maths teacher incorporates statistics and data, the science teacher looks at environmental degradation and deforestation, the social studies teacher incorporates the definition of poverty and six or seven causes of poverty. And we've done this unit for several years, and we've looked at different countries. And this last year, we decided that we would focus on the country of Afghanistan. Never before have the students jumped to what they did last year. And you are right that this was all came from their heart in the, responding to not only our research unit, but your visit, and clearly the book, The Raja's Ray of Hope. In addition, we had read another book called Kids of Kabul, which some of you might be familiar with, written by Deborah Ellis, which are firsthand accounts or rewrites of narratives that children from Afghanistan have relayed. And then many students on their own chose to read the book Breadwinner, which is a fictional account, but also takes place in Afghanistan. So the four students here are here to tell you a little bit about their story. It's very cool when kids take on action without being asked, and a lot of schools are now asking SIDS or requiring students to do community service. This was not in response to any sort of assignment. It was, they were inspired by the research project, your visit, and the book. So I think Ella's going to start first, okay?
In March of 2014, I, along with my classmates, worked on an Afghanistan poverty project. We read numerous pieces about poverty in Afghanistan itself. When I read about Afghanistan's culture, I thought about how magnificent and unique it sounded. It seemed like it would be a thriving nation. But by simply reading about war or government or just peeking at the CIA World Factbook, it became clear to me how awful a condition Afghanistan is in. Reading many sources, I could piece together a pretty good picture about what Afghanistan was like. I had an image in my mind of a street seemingly crowded from size, but with only a few people walking around. It was a marketplace. A few women in burqas were walking around and in a fashion similar to that of a child when lost in a huge store, acting as though they had somewhere to go and they might be late if they dawdled. The only difference between the child and the woman is the child will find their parents, and the woman will only turn a corner and keep living a life of silence and fear. At first, I could only see a hazy picture, but after reading firsthand accounts like Kids of Kabul or even fiction stories like Raja's Ray of Hope, I started to see how real this problem was. I think the moment that I broke the haze was when we were learning about the Zabuli Education Center and how it was actually necessary to have someone check the water before the girls came to school. The thought of that was just so real and awful. After we read Raja's Ray of Hope, I kept thinking about how the story was happy. It was more optimistic about the future. It wasn't exactly a cliche happy with rainbows and butterflies. It was an imperfect happy. One quote in the book that stuck in my head was, "Every night I fell asleep, dreaming about going to school like my brothers." It seemed sad to me that probably some girls would dream about going to school every night, but they would never actually experience an education firsthand. And it has awed me, and still does awe me, that how amazing Raja Jan and Patty Quigley are to create such a wonderful center for life.
So there was a quote from Raja's Ray of Hope that really caught my attention. "I passed a stone wall being built around the school grounds, and I knocked on the bright red door." This quote really showed that that Razia in the book could take action and pursue her dream, which was to get an education. We decided to take action and help those girls pursue their dreams in Afghanistan. We did 5 different activities to raise money for Razia's Ray of Hope and the Foundation for Zabuli Education Center. These activities were all mostly student-led and organized. It showed how we could cooperate and reach our goal, which was to send one girl to school. Our first activity was a drink stand. It was held at middle school recess, and we sold lemonade and smoothies and slushies. The second activity we did was a cakewalk, which is like musical chairs, and if you landed on the spot that they called when the music was over, you won a cupcake. The next day we did a bake sale. It was held during middle school lunch and recess, and it was a big success because everyone likes to eat cookies and things. Another activity that we did was a penny war. There were jugs in each homeroom in the sixth grade, and for 1 week, the students could put pennies in the jugs and try and sabotage the other homerooms by putting silver coins or bills that deducted points. The final activity that we did was a yard sale. This was held for the elementary kids, and it was during their recess. It was good to involve the younger kids because everything else was just for the older kids.
So I just brought, just, you know, the kids obviously made posters, which is kind of self-explanatory. The number of blenders they brought in for the day that they wanted to run a smoothie stand, we were having problems getting the electrical cords outside from classrooms so that we could be making slushies and smoothies. But as Alana said, it was a great way for kids to meet in small groups and cooperatively create a fundraiser without any adult intervention other than managing the electrical wires. So I think now it's Tilly.
Last year in sixth grade, we did research on Afghanistan. One part in reading Rajia's Ray of Hope is when Rajia's brother announces Rajia is not going to school. Those six simple words made my heart sink because I love school. In fact, all of our hearts sank. We couldn't believe that her brother didn't want her to learn how to read and write. We also realized how fortunate we are in the United States being able to go to school and learn so many things. At that point, we really wanted to find a way to help girls in Afghanistan go to school. The more girls that go to school, the more they can teach their communities to read and write. Once whole communities are better educated, they can help fight poverty together and make everything better. With the money we raised, we were able to send a lot of girls to school. That may not seem like a big number, but every little bit helps, and this is a great start. Someday, these girls will be able to teach others how to read and write. Knowing that they are now going to school makes our hearts soar.
A line from Raja's Ray of Hope that caught my attention was, "If men are the backbone of Afghanistan, then women are the eyes of the country. Without an education, we'd all be blind." That line inspired our grade to help the Zabuli Education Center. There were many possible charities we could have assisted, but with reading Raj's Ray of Hope, our research paper, and having the author, Elizabeth Senebi, come in and talk about Afghanistan in the book, our grade decided to help the Zabuli Education Center.
So thank you, and thank you for inspiring us.
Thank you so much. I can't thank you guys enough. And believe me, for these, it was March, right? And it's for all these months, every time I sit or if I'm in this country, I tell Patty, we should get in touch with her again. You know, it was such a wonderful program and such a, I think it's just not getting the funds, but the children to make understand what other people or other kids are going through. We are so lucky in this country to have all, and there are countries that have nothing. What she said is really very important, and she said in the beginning of the school, when I opened the school, and next day we were opening, and the vice president and the minister of education was coming, and the mayor was coming, and quite a few people were coming in to open the school. And that evening we were cleaning, and I was dirty, and women were inside cleaning the windows, and men were trying to clean up outside. And And it's 6 o'clock in the evening, and the guard comes to me and say, there are four men who has tashwish. Tashwish means they have a question, they have a worry. So I go down, and I don't know if my head was covered either. I go down and I say, yes, may I help you? And these four men were partially dressed, that a villager can be, white clothes, chapans and pattus, and very well-groomed. And they said, just put his finger in my face and said, you know, still you have chance to change this into boys' school. Because, he said, the boys are, or the men are, backbone of Afghanistan. And God gave me, I don't know, whoever, and I put my finger in his face, and I said, you know, girls are eyesight of Afghanistan, and unfortunately, you all are blind, and I really want to give you light. And that is amazing that you thought about it. It's really the main thing of really giving these girls education. And those men left, and I've never seen them again. It's 7 years. And I think these were the top men of those villages. There are seven villages that we have girls coming to our school, and I think those men were really high position. Everybody else tried during the construction. They were not successful, and these guys thought, hey, we'll go and you know, threaten her in a way that she should change. And I didn't change because my mind was so set to have girls. And it was a struggle, but we started with 100 students and faced a lot of difficulties and, you know, security and other things. But today we have 440 girls. And hopefully next year we'll have more than 500. And one of them said that we are so careful. People ask me, are you worried? Yes, of course I'm worried. Are you scared? Of course I'm scared. But we do the best we can. We have great hope. You know, every day if I'm there, I will drink the water from the well before we put it in their coolers to take it to the classroom. And I wait 10 minutes. If I drop dead, that means it's poisoned. Don't give anybody water. Or if I'm not there, the principal will do the same thing. So it's something that we are very careful. We check the rooms if there's no gas. We are very careful about the girls walking in groups. They're not walking alone. And so far, for 7 years, we've been very successful. And as time has passed, the parents have really working with us instead of against us. And we are getting more children, more girls coming to school than we had before. So we hope that this will continue, and our project for them to finish other 2 years, I think it will work. And I think as time goes by, one day some of the girls who are in kindergarten will be able to leave the village and go to universities or colleges or places. And everything is really on hope. And we have great hope, and I'm so thankful to for Liz to write the book, and I'm so thankful for the organization that printed the book. I think she is here somewhere. Yeah, she's right there. And it's amazing illustration, amazing, really tells you the story. And I'm so proud to be part of this group, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I have the good fortune on a daily basis to work with inspiring people, but it never ceases to amaze me how I can get reinvigorated by so much good work that's going on in the world. So I thank you all, especially our students and our educators who are doing such great things with kids. So now is a great opportunity to hear from you, to hear what you're doing in your communities, to also have you ask questions of our panel. We have two mics up here, so if you'd like, we'll pass a mic to you so that we get it. So that we can hear your voices. I'd love to hear from you. Come on. You guys have been so quiet today. Does anybody have a school or some students or projects they've been working on that they'd like to share?
So I'm from the Carlisle Schools too. Ella is my twin sister. So I was also there for the presentation. And I don't have a script.
It's okay.
It's really pretty amazing the amount of money that we managed to make over just a week on for the student-based fundraisers. We ended up making over $1,000, I think, in the Penny War alone. Because students were really competitive.
Will you tell the people in the room that if the boys won the Penny War, what did the girls have to do? The girls won the Penny War, what did the boys have to do?
So the rules for the Penny War were that if the boys won, the girls had to sing for one day of school, and if the girls won, the boys had to sing. And also we had, along with that, a homeroom. The homeroom's total was counted up, and the winning homeroom got to have pizza for lunch one of the days.
Hi, I'm Carrie. I'm from Duxbury High School, and I'm here with my friends Bella and Caitlin. And we recently just started a chapter of this national organization at our school. Have any of you heard of She's the First?
No.
It's this like national organization that raises money for girls' education, and they work in 10 countries, I think, to bring education to girls. And like a way that they raise the money is that they have girls in schools across America like start a chapter of the club in their school and raise money to give to the organization. So we started She's the First Duxbury, and we had our first meeting last week. And we haven't raised any money yet, but we're having a bake sale on Friday. And
try the Penny War.
We're really looking forward to the rest of the year.
That's amazing. That's great.
Thank you. I just want to make a quick observation. I was mentioning earlier that it's just exciting to see how much young people can do, but I want to even be more precise and say how much girls can do. Because if you think about it, both in the One Hen story, which is about microfinance, that was actually started by women. That was a women's movement. Women who didn't have, and it goes back, you know, a century. It goes back far before Grameen Bank, which some of you may have heard of, kind of coined the term microfinance, but savings clubs, women having savings clubs where they each save and then one of them gets to use the money, that was something women who didn't have the power to go outside their villages and, you know, trade started. And then I look at the education movement and the way the girls are really, able to show that their reading helps their whole community, and their being educated helps their whole community. And I just think it's pretty exciting to see this, you know, this She First movement you've talked about, how much as young girls you can also do. She's the First. Can I just mention also that both Rosie's Ray of Hope and One Hen have newsletters, and ours is a teacher resource or a student resource newsletter four times a year, is that right? Four times a year, where we have an online website, onehen.org, that has lots of lesson plans and activities. Barbara mentioned the bead activity. There's actually online fun games, kind of Club Penguinish games, that you can earn beads and invest them in real microloans. So it's a fun way, just using the computer to actually create some change. And Opportunity International matches it, a penny a bead, to real loans in Africa. So that's on the website. But we have where the bookmarks? Oh, on the floor. Sorry. We have bookmarks with the website on it. So if you want to get that at the end, you can. And also, if you want to sign up for either the One Hen newsletter or the Rosie's Ray of Hope newsletter, there's Patty.
So rosiesrayofhope.org. It's all one word. Rosie is without an apostrophe. rosiesrayofhope.org is our website. You gotta check it out. We just updated it, right? So 7 years ago, we designed the website, and I thought, this is awesome. And then we had two of our very first employees start this year. And
so cute, Russell. I don't know if he's here or downstairs. I think we need to update the website. Check it out. We updated it, and we have links for students, links for teachers, links for grantors, and you can sign up to be on our email as well, and you will receive something. So then by the end of today, if any of the students or the parents, or if you're a teacher and you're interested in having Liz come to your school and or Razia, please see Liz, please see me. We both have business cards. We can connect you guys right away. Thanks.
And I just also should introduce Jessica, who is our program director at One Hen. And if you want to do school visits or anything with your school, any kind of support for programs, Jessica's the person to talk to. And fun fact is, both the websites have the same, don't we both share a staff person for the websites, Sheree?
Sheree, yes.
So if you like both websites, there's actually a common thread between them, which is very fun.
Before we close, does anyone else have questions or comments they'd like to share? We have a few more minutes.
And we also have downstairs, so there's a book signing downstairs afterwards. So please enjoy yourself and enjoy the sun today, please.
I know.
Come and talk to
us. Yeah, I think then we have a few minutes, so feel free to come and join the panel. Thank you for coming today, and thanks to our wonderful panel.